It has made great progress as far as freedom is concerned. We are one of the freest nations in the world. I have traveled, not extensively, but I have traveled some abroad. And believe me, it's always great to come back home. Along that same line, I believe that we, the native people, especially of Alaska, this being the so-called last frontier of North America, are the freest people in North America. And since the United States government and its people places so much lip service in support of freedom and democracy, I would think that if they were looking out for our best interests as we, the freest people, that they would do everything in their power to ensure that we as a culture and a people survive. Our people are very, very independent. That is one of the things that, one of the aspects of our people which Western society is not very well aware. In a matter of hours, we can be sitting here talking in this great urban mass of civilization, and to us it's a jungle. We have more problems trying to keep our personal bodies all in one piece and safe here in a civilized area than we do back in the village. And when we get out into the country, which we are so much a part of, we are truly free. We answer to no man, and we ask no man to answer to us. And we have the greatest of respect for that freedom. And that is why you see this movement now to protect that freedom. Somewhere along the line, this respect for this freedom has gotten lost, and we would hope to reawaken it. We are self-sufficient people by the very nature of where we live and how we live. We don't take care of ourselves on a day-to-day basis. We do it by years. When we harvest our resources, it's not just for the day or the week or the month. We do it until the next season comes about. And as free and independent people, your man in the village is very intolerant of government as we know it in the cities. We accept the extended family and its protocol and constraints because we have to live with them. They're our family. Tribal government is tolerated as necessary to prevent the breakdown of our societies and cultures. With the advent of the state government, we were pretty much blackmailed into the formation of second-class cities. The state's attitude then was that until such time as you incorporate into a city, we will not fund you. At that time, the state wasn't very wealthy, so it really didn't make that much difference. But with the advent of the pipeline and Prudhoe Bay, all of a sudden there was all this wealth available. And the village people . Their culture is based on the ability to adapt. If you can't get money as a tribal government and you need money to govern your people, would it not make sense then to adapt, to access funding? And that is one of the major reasons why we have seen a proliferation of cities in Bush, Alaska. As far as the day-to-day lives of our natives of Alaska, we are now seeing that we have to make a choice. What mechanism of local government will best serve our people? And as things are structured today, we are seeing that we will face very serious problems under the municipal forms of government. And Akichak has taken the lead as far as reverting. They have dissolved their city government and are now in the process of finalizing that dissolution. Again, I come back to cultural equality. Our lifestyle, our subsistence way of life will not, I emphasize, will not survive if everyone's individual right to access to those resources is to be allowed. Our native people moved here to Alaska, I would think, for two reasons. Number one, to get away from the strife and the wars that have been endemic down through history. And number two, to find a way of life in a climate and an environment so harsh that nobody else would want it. And it's only within the last 100 years that the resources available in our land have proven that that is not so. One of the greatest problems we have now, if we are to resolve all these integrated problems, is the education and information of our natives. This will be our number one priority. The second priority is the information and education of the non-natives of not only our state, but of the nation. Alienation of stock, as far as I'm concerned, is a moot point, because the regional corporations own the subsurface estate. And as such, whatever way they go, goes the way of our land. I would seriously urge this commission to look into the corporate indebtedness of our regional corporation. And I would also urge you to look at the due dates on these loans. What is the due date on the loan which finances Sheraton Corporation, the Sheraton Hotel, or the Hilton Hotel? Rumor has it that that the due date on that indebtedness is 19 December 1991. As far as Indian country is concerned, Indian country, as far as we natives are concerned, has always been attempted to be determined by outside forces. I believe that it is necessary and proper and only fair to ask the natives of Alaska, what is your country, rather than to say from the outside, is there any? Traditionally, before the advent of the Western Society in Alaska, the Native peoples were nomadic peoples, adapting their life and their lifestyles to be in tune with their environment and the resources upon which they depended. It was only with the advent of the missionaries and the schools that the Native people of Alaska settled in the villages permanently. We have used and occupied vast areas of the state even in our regions, if you talk to the elders and start asking him about the boundaries of their travels, it's huge, it's vast. One of the reasons also I think that we are fighting from a defensive position is the fact that the leaders which negotiated the Claim Settlement Act did not consult with their elders. And as such, the elders that I speak to are telling me that they are gravely concerned. The corporations are not safeguarding our land. They are not safeguarding our resources, our culture, or our heritage. And it is the elders who determine the direction and policy of our people. They provide guidance. And as such, I believe that they are the prime movers of the movement now back to tribal government and sovereignty, because they are truly concerned that everything about our people and our way of life is threatened under the corporate mechanism. And I believe, as I said to the 6th Annual Elders Conference in Nome, that we have to prevent our people becoming minorities in our own hometown. A recent survey done by a major news organization here in Alaska has said that we're on the very verge of entering that era. 52.7, I believe, percent of the population of Bush, Alaska is Native. 47.3 is non-Native. So we're getting very close to that point already. And one of the things that has kept me going as I try to determine how to help my people is that motto of the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood of Southeast Alaska, which says that everything I do is not for me and my own, but for my grandchildren. And I would ask all of our people, all the Native people of Alaska, to unite in our efforts to preserve and protect our Native lands, our resources, our heritage, and our culture. And I'm asking the corporate leaders, our social organizations, our nonprofits, our tribal governments, everyone, if we don't stand together on this, we're going to lose it all. And 1991, as far as I'm concerned, is very misleading, because it implies that we have 7 years to do something about this. The time to do it is now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ketchatag. Well, you've given us much food for thought, and I think most present would like to reflect on what you've said and what Mr. Starr said earlier for a little while, so I think this would be a good time to adjourn for lunch, and we'll come back at 1:30, 1 hour from now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, that's going to take quite a picture.
Thanks. Oh, good. Because I've got a passport.
Somewhere I got a pen. There it is.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just stick with this, I guess.
Hey.
Yeah, 7:30 a.m. on me coming back at 12.
Well, you lost your pen?
Yeah.
I didn't take it. I had a hell of a time finding my mom.
Last of the big time.
Okay.
Do you have next one?
Oh. Yeah, I better.
This is a reciprocation.
We have a couple of hours, and we're still rolling along very well. Did any of you wish to make any observations on what Sheldon Kachetag said this morning, or to make any observations on what Alfred Starr said this morning? We have one or two other items to cover in any event. We have with us this afternoon Mr. Jan Konigsberg, of Montana Land Reliance. I think Mr. Konigsberg and his father are well known to many of you. And since we are discussing forms of holding land that may be innovative and may be of interest to Alaska Natives, it might be useful if we asked him to discuss that subject for a few minutes. Mr. Konigsberg, if you'd like to go ahead, take the microphone and then just proceed with the subject as you think fit.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. I hadn't really expected to speak to the commission today. I had asked Doric Michel to give me an opinion of my broadly conceived notion of an alternative land conservation for Alaska over lunch, and he suggested and put me in the hot spot of saying, why don't you present it to the commission? And I'd like to preface my remarks by saying that I haven't had the opportunity to develop my ideas at all fully with respect to how they may apply to Alaska, but I'd like to simply put it out on the table so that those of you who are working with it on a day-to-day issue on a day-to-day basis can at least consider it as an alternative. And I'd be most interested in, as it, as you think about it, in hearing from you as to whether or not you think it makes sense. The tool that I'm familiar with and that may have some applicability in Alaska on native land is a conservation easement. The conservation easement is essentially an easement attached to the deed that frames the use of the land in perpetuity. That is, it's a negotiated document that allows for certain uses of the land and prohibits certain uses from of the land. And as a background example to what an easement is, my work is with an organization called the Montana Land Reliance. And that organization protects agricultural land in Montana. The Montana Land Reliance is called a land trust. There are approximately 400 local land trusts in the lower 48. All of those trusts are dedicated to conservation of land. Not all the land trusts are involved with agricultural land. Some protect scenic areas. Some protect simply river corridors. Others protect public recreation and public access to certain areas in the United States. Now, when we're working with a tool, we go to a rancher or to a farmer who owns, you know, who owns a considerable amount of land, private land, in Montana, maybe anywhere from 7,000 to 40,000 acres under individual ownership. And we ask that person to donate their development rights to our organization. Now, what that means is that we will write a document, the conservation easement, that donates the rights of development to our organization, which then prohibits the development of that land in non-agricultural use in perpetuity. As soon as the document's signed, our organization accepts the responsibility for ensuring that the land is conserved in agriculture in perpetuity, or if some future owner prefers to simply let it return to its natural state, that's permitted as well. Now, one of the beauties of this tool is that it's private. We don't rely on any government agency or organization to affect its purpose. The use of the easement is allowed under state law, and there's tax benefits under federal law. So undoubtedly, the framework for it has its basis in law, but the actual implementation is all done between the private landowner and the land trust, which is a private organization. There may be some application, and again, if you'd like to think about how it would apply, I raise it in that sense. There may be some application in Alaska on native land where the deed of the land could be restricted on the basis of, Mr. Chase indicated, a subsistence easement, where, assuming that certain development will occur, and assuming that if it occurs in a traditional framework, that development's going to be constrained by existing state and federal and local law. And I know from our experience in Montana, and I followed Alaska from afar since my father and mother do live here, I know that that's often fraught. And by the way, I spent 7 years in state government regulating energy development. I'm too much of a cynic to believe that the traditional approach in terms of government regulation to resource protection is a viable one. I think that this tool, the easement, allows you to restrict it, the development within a framework that makes sense to all the parties, including the villages and the regional corporations. It doesn't prohibit development, but what it would do, if it were framed correctly, would allow for the protection of the renewable resource base and would ensure, again, a negotiated matter, could ensure that the use of the non-renewable resources were done in a manner concomitant with a subsistence culture. Now, it may or may not take the detail of a management plan. What I suspect may be the case is that it would be a constitutional kind of framework for the use of that land, so that you wouldn't put in the easement document specifically how such and such an acreage were to be logged, how and such a river drainage were to be developed. Because it constitutes a private, it occurs within the context of property law, the implementation of that would be based on having an institution that was somewhat akin to a land trust, which presently, and to my knowledge, there are no trusts in Alaska that are set up to administer easements. What I'm suggesting is you have a corporate structure that is obviously set up or had been established to facilitate development. There is no parallel institution with the kind of power to enforce a cultural notion of subsistence. From what I've heard and read in the past few years, that's a groundswell. People who voice the concern don't have the power that the corporate entities have. The whole, I guess, the institutional perspective of this would be that you would create an institution whose goal would be to make sure the conservation purposes were being achieved, so that you'd have a parallel counterforce, if you will, to the development entity. And that institution would function like a land trust. It would enforce the provisions of the easement in perpetuity. And how, I don't have any answers as to how that would be established or how the members would be elected or appointed or their tenure or the bylaws under which those trusts would operate, or even if they'd be called a trust. But the point is that there'd be a parallel institution enforcing an aspect of property law. And the easement document would allow for arbitration and, if necessary, would allow for legal enforcement of the easement in perpetuity, so that you wouldn't be in a position of having a development entity coming in doing something and nothing but the traditional framework for enforcing conservation purposes. This organization would be specifically devoted to that. Now, the other question, of course, is how would it be funded? It's very important in all land trust experience that the funds be there. You cannot take on that kind of role without an endowment fund. So whatever, that's the important consideration, is how would you fund that kind of a trust institution? I would suggest just off the top of my head that something like 10% or 20% of the revenues that come out of the development entity would have to go to support the trust. Now, that's about as far as I've carried it in my own mind. I haven't developed it. I certainly feel I normally wouldn't throw out ideas that are so ill thought out, but I'm only up here for a short time, and this is the only opportunity I'm going to have to raise the question. And I'd simply reflect on my own experience in working with land trusts. I went to work for this organization last year. I spent 7 years working with the state government on resource issues, and I can tell you that the framework of the easement is a much easier one to administer than that of the law of resource development law. And to explain why, I think, would take a long time, but that's my own personal bias. I have found it a much more suitable framework for achieving conservation values on private land. And one other thing is that the public agencies themselves are now particularly concerned that their activities on resource protection will be influenced by conservation easement procedures. They simply don't have the money to acquire land, and the Forest Service, the National Park Service, Department of Agriculture is moving in the direction of utilizing the conservation easement. There are a number of other tools that are available, bargain sales. In other words, if necessary, for example, you could sell land to private developers and attach a conservation easement restriction on the sale of that land. If it should become necessary under the taxation provisions of the land claim settlement, and I think this is at least a fear I've heard, that portions of the land get alienated. Whether or not they will or not, I don't know. But if they were to be alienated, you can restrict the use of that land with the sale of the land by deed. So if that may be an area, the whole area of land conservation through property law may be an area worth exploring on the part of Native people. That's essentially what I'd like to bring to the committee. I'm glad to answer any specific questions if I can.
Thank you, Mr. Konigsberg. In fact, it is my understanding that in Australia, arrangement for holding Aboriginal land that is being developed is one in which the land is held in fee by a trustee, but the trustee takes direction from an elected land council that is constituted of Aboriginal people. I mentioned that as a footnote to what Mr. Konigsberg has said, because it brings us back to something that Ralph Johnson urged earlier in the week, that is that consideration be given to developing new ideas about ways for Native people to hold their land in perpetuity without for uses they deem appropriate, without it being subject to the federal government trust. So I think it is useful to at least know that there are other ideas floating around out there that might in one way or another be adapted to purposes of Alaska Natives. Do any of you have any questions for Mr. Konigsberg or any observations on what he has said? Alma Yupikson. All right, Ralph Lerner.
Were you going to ask a question or make a
presentation? Two questions, good.
Oh, no, then yeah. I defer.
I was a little confused, I guess, in setting up a conservation easement. Would this be something included in the land title or a contract, or is it in private hands? I mean, how is it done?
The in the case of the land that we deal with, the easement, we deal with the present owner of the property, and the easement's drawn up, and then it's recorded at the county clerk and recorder and attached to the deed, and it's an attachment to the deed of the property so that it runs with the land. Any future owners have to observe the conditions of the easement. It doesn't prevent, in our case, ownership, subdivision of ownership of that property. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I had another question. Are you familiar, or have you compared this in any way with the land bank system that was developed under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act?
No, I haven't.
What you're suggesting, Mr. Konigsberg, merely for people to think about, is the possibility that just as you approach ranchers in Montana to sign a perpetual easement dedicating a portion of their land to agricultural purposes, that here the corporations which hold the land might be asked to agree to easements dedicating the land in perpetuity to subsistence purposes.
Right.
Mr. Lerner.
Mr. Konigsberg, whom I've never met nor indeed ever heard of, and I think it's probably our ignorance is mutual, has really gratified me by his remarks in that I didn't have the wit or imagination to think of a detailed way, though I've urged in a general way the exploration of devices within the framework of standard American private property law whereby large collective purposes might better be served. I wonder whether there would be some useful advice for people thinking about the Alaskan situation if they consulted with an organization such as the Nature Conservancy or maybe Open Lands Trust or so on, who have worked in this way, trying to circumvent the whole uncertainty of fluctuating governmental policies.
I think that's important. The Conservancy has probably had the most experience of any land group in the United States. There is the organization that the land trust, the local land trusts have formed is the Land Trust Exchange, and it's based in Maine. And there is another group in California called the Trust for Public Lands that provides all the initial legal information to new land trusts. That's their job in the United, in the lower 48, is to help new trusts get started. I'll be glad to provide a list of organizations. There's a couple of excellent publications out, one of which I have to admit the Land Reliance put together, but book form on this, on the private tools of land conservation that would, I think, be very useful to look at, to review.
Mr. Ketchetag.
One last area which I think most people generally don't think of because I think it's a problem of perspective is the fact that I believe that your IRA and your traditional governments also have the power and authority to hold land in trust in perpetuity. Everybody is devising possible solutions again from the outside in. Why don't we ask the people in the village, what do you think would be acceptable to you? And I think we as IRA and tribal governments, after all the education that we have received at the hands not only of your educational institutions but in dealing with your governments, believe we have the ability to manage land in trust as a government. And I would, again, please try in your thinking to consider the perspective of your everyday Alaska Native in the village. He is very resentful of outside interference, even if it's in their own best interests, as far as you're concerned. We have to ask the man in the village what he would be most comfortable with. And there is a strong movement afoot now for local control, self-determination, self-sufficiency. And the best way that I can see personally to implement that would be through our traditional tribal governments to hold the land in trust for our tribal members. Thank you.
Could I, Mr. Ketchetag, could I just follow that up? In the lower 48, where you have IRA governments, and Mr. Johnson will correct me, I'm sure, if I'm wrong about this, the federal government is trustee. It holds the land for the benefit of the members of the tribe. You're suggesting that the tribal council should actually hold the land as trustee for the members of the tribe. That's what you said, and I just wanted to make sure there was no misunderstanding between us about that.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm trying to get across is the fact that the Native people of Alaska have been reacting to external stimuli ever since we have been interacting with the Western society and its governments. We, as independent people, which we generally are, and especially at the village level, have never been asked how we feel about these things. And as a result, we have been fighting a battle which we are continually having to turn around and say, bang, okay, I shot at you, and then you turn around and there's somebody else again. What we're asking for is the respect that we have the ability to manage our own affairs. You know, even if you have our best interests at heart, it's still considered meddling.
Can I just say one?
Yes, Mr. Koenigsberg.
And then, Alma, you...
I'll make this short. I certainly don't intend to be perceived as an outside influence, but since we are talking about people's aspirations, I'll just give you my aspiration. And that is, my view of ownership may be different than yours, but I don't think, the reason I work for the Montana Land Alliance is I don't think that anybody owns the land. I think they're there to take care of it. And so I'm as interested, perhaps as you are, in making sure the land in Alaska and Montana is well taken care of. And the only thing I was suggesting was that when one makes a decision that's going to have long-term effects, that people be aware of all the choices they have to do it. And my one concern about governments, whether they're native governments or white governments or whatever, is that they are subject to temporary immediate needs that will influence immediate actions that have long-term consequences. And unless the land is protected from that kind of human interference, the land itself, then we may not have what we want in the long run. An easement simply put protects that land from human variance to the extent possible under property law, so that a government could hold land in trust for people. The question is, who's running the government? And I don't, you know, this isn't meant to be disrespectful to anyone, but I don't trust any government all the time. And I think that's something that is of benefit for everybody to learn from our, you know, from white culture's experience. So simply put, an easement would allow you to make sure that the conditions under which the land will be treated in its broadest respect won't depend on who happens to be in power in the future. That's all I'm saying.
Alma, you pick some, and then Joe Jorgensen.
If I can be correct in assuming that Mr. Koenigsberg, your perspective is one looking at Native corporations as private entities holding private land in that suggestion, and with Mr. Kachetek looking at the alternative of IRA governments through the federal government holding land in trust. Is that right? No.
No.
Okay. From what you had said before.
I think I got it right.
I'll clarify that a little bit, Alma. Okay. I really don't feel that the Native people would entirely trust the federal government after the treatment that we have received at their hands. We trusted everything, and I mean everything, about our lives to the federal government. And then we had to turn around and claim it back again. And we're still in that process. Also, it doesn't make sense to me, as I consider myself a semi-reasonable person, to expect a government with a debt to the extent of $1.6 trillion or whatever it is to be able to hold anything in trust for me. And it's about time that we as Natives be allowed to determine for ourselves whether we fail or not. In other words, if our ship is going to sink, then damn it, let us be the captains and sink it rather than have somebody shoot it out of the water from under us. Thank you.
All right, Alma.
You've addressed or raised a point which I wanted to discuss, especially in this forum when we're supposed to be looking at United States policy and its effect or parallelisms to the Alaska situation. And I think IRA governments in the 48 is one instance that we have to look at and understand in Alaska, you know, what it means there, what it means here, and how it's developed the problems and the solutions it may or may not have raised. And if IRA councils as instruments are created or solicited by the federal government, as an instrument of the federal government, if we can look at it that way and also bring in a new perspective that those foundations maybe possibly could be changed and that it would not necessarily be the federal government in a trust situation with IRA governments. It's a different situation, and I think that needs to be emphasized as apart from what has happened in the 48, that the IRA situation, which you have in mind, is a much different vision or a view than what has happened in the lower 48.
Yes, Mr. Ketchetag.
One last point in this regard is that the Secretary of the Interior, through the IRA Act of 1934, was authorized at his discretion to set up reservations. And there has only been one reservation set up in the whole state of Alaska, the Metlakatla. Now, I really don't see that if we are to be truly self-determining, to be truly self-sufficient, that we are to rely on the discretion of one man, any one man. And again, it brings my point about us being able to hold land in trust as governments. Whether or not it's IRA or not, we still have tribal government. Congress could go ahead and say tomorrow that by an act of Congress, there shall be no more IRAs, period.